And then my husband took a job in Chapel Hill. So basically we worked 2 hours apart with zero traffic or three with traffic, and life got complicated. So I foolishly and crazily thought, you know, how you kind of don't know any better until you know better, that somehow it would reserve family time and give more time back in my life by starting an office from scratch, which anybody who's done that can tell you that is far from the truth. I'd have been better off commuting for the rest of my life.
Welcome to The Dental Marketer. This is your go-to podcast for diving deep into the world of business, marketing, self-development, and dentistry. From startup secrets to real talk with the pros, we've got it all. So whether you're just starting out or you're deep in years in running your own practice, join us for a mix of success stories, a few learning curves, and loads of insights from the brightest in the industry. We'll chat, learn, and grow together, one episode at a time. Now, do you get hung up on the quote-unquote right way to do something in your practice? Well, today I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Laree Johnson, and she shares her journey of establishing a thriving dental practice from scratch and how her flexible and resilient attitude made all the difference in her career fulfillment. And she talks about striking a balance between work life and home and how it isn't as straightforward as it seems, especially when you're a dental practice owner like Laree, who despite initially believing that her own practice would afford her more family time, she quickly realized the reality was far from different. So today we're gathering lessons from her experiences of juggling various responsibilities and managing multiple office locations. What you'll learn in this episode is 1, how to start a dental practice from the ground up. 2, why to never say always and keep an open mind. 3, the challenges involved in balancing work and family life. 4, the importance of effective communication in the dental office. 5, how to manage multiple office locations successfully. And 6, the significance of continuing education and community involvement. So without further delay, here is Dr. Laree Johnson. We're diving into Oryx. It's not just another tool for managing your dental practice. It's a total game changer with a special clinical module that's got the backing of the COI Center. Oryx is all about taking patient care to the next level with the latest in dental research. It's super easy to use with your current setup, making everything from tracking to treatment planning smoother and more efficient. Plus, with Pearl in the mix, you're getting some serious AI power to boost your imaging game. And here's the cool part for startups. Oryx is on the house, completely free, until you hit 200 patients. That's 200 active patients. So why not give it a whirl? Go in the show notes below, click the first link in the show notes below for a free demo and see how Oryx can help your practice shine. Laree, how's it going?
It's a great day. It's very beautiful here in sunny North Carolina.
Wonderful. How long have you been in North Carolina for?
I moved here in 1996 to begin my residency at UNC.
Okay, nice, nice. So then if you can, tell us a little bit about your past, your present. How'd you get to where you are today?
So I was born and raised in Southern California, spent my summers in Texas with my grandparents. For a variety of reasons, primarily education, I ended up going to undergrad in Arkansas, of all crazy journeys. And then I went to dental school in Tennessee. And then I went to, you know, Chapel Hill to attend residency. And I met my husband there, who is also not a North Carolinian. And we loved it so much here, we decided to raise a family in North Carolina. And the children are both North Carolinians. That's how we made the journey. And that's how where I am today. Other things of note that I feel are impactful. You know, I was an associate in an amazing, beautiful practice with Dr. Larry Dempsey in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, which I always say, if I could go back and do it again, I would stay an associate because he was an amazing provider, a great mentor. And let's face it, it's way easier not owning your own business. But neither here nor there, I was with him for 3 years. I started there before I got married, and then we had a child. And then my husband took a job in Chapel Hill. So basically, we worked 2 hours apart with zero traffic or three with traffic, and life got complicated. So I foolishly and crazily thought, you know, how you kind of don't know any better until you know better, that somehow it would reserve family time and give more time back in my life by starting an office from scratch, which anybody who's done that can tell you that is far from the truth. I'd have been better off commuting for the rest of my life. But anyway, start an office from scratch, and the office, very fortunate, it grew a lot, opened a first, second location, ended up selling that location just to downsize. My children were small, spending a little bit too much administrative time. So did that, opened another office with my now partner, Clark Morris, who's an amazing guy, perfect provider, great, just great all over the place. And we opened a second office downtown Raleigh together. And I will have another fun fact for anybody who's never opened an urban office. It's a whole new adventure, because when things run late, you can't work late building when there's high-end condos above you. Mm-hmm. Work ceases at 5 p.m. on a upset and so forth. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit. Other things of value, how I got here. Very fortunate to be chosen to be a director for the American Board of Pediatric Dentistry, which was a great experience. I love supporting our specialty, being chosen to attend the Northwestern Kellogg School of Management Leadership Institute to get a certificate in leadership. Other fun things, I'm in pursuit of my Spanish certification, my writing certification with Berkeley Extension, and my yoga certification, which is where I'm heading after to meet with my mentor after I'm done with you today, because I don't have patience today. That's a nutshell. And best part of my life, my husband and my two kids and my dog, Daisy. She's a yellow lab. That's really, really the best part. But I think you're talking about professional things today.
Yeah, no, I mean, we love to hear all of it. So that's fantastic. Thank you so much for that. Now, if we can rewind a little bit, you said you were an associate in an amazing, beautiful practice. And the reason you didn't stay was because your husband moved, right? Or jobs?
It really was. We lived in Raleigh, ironically, at the time. And he commuted about an hour and 15 minutes one way. And I commuted about an hour the other way. And our child was staying in the middle. So it was neither of us really being close. We only had one child then. Neither of us being close to her was not a good deal. So we chose to centralize our life. And as it would be, and it's so funny, and this is just early 2000s sort of situation. So the office opened on our daughter's first birthday. And of course, there's delays in every construction project. I would love to meet someone who had something open on time so I can quit saying the always word, because you should never say the word always. But my husband worked for this amazing startup that he loved his job. It was called BOPS, billions of operations per second. At the time, he was utilizing his three engineering degrees instead of his doctorate in business. But 2 weeks after the office opened, which was the whole reason why I opened the office, that company went under.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, wow, that just happened, you know, but mm-hmm. That's life. So yeah, it was a really great practice. And it wasn't, you know, some people, you know, everyone has, it's just like marriage. When you practice with someone, there's not going to be everything that you're absolutely in line with 100% of the time, but we were 99% of the time. We had a great relationship. My husband and I spending at least a combined 4 hours and 15 minutes a day in the car. That's a lot of hours that we should be together. So
yeah,
that's what we did.
Interesting. So then immediately when you guys moved, the company went under?
Company went under, which ironically was a bit of a blessing, because I actually needed his support way more than I could have ever. I felt like I had a great mentor, and Dr. Dempsey tried to teach me business as well. And I felt like, but you're only one person that can only be in one space. And when you're opening an office and you're working hard in the clinic, you don't really know what's going on at the front. So my husband immediately had another job, but took a little pause just to get the business side of the practice, mm-hmm. helping me out with that, which was great, because we had a one-year-old daughter who, ironically, for the longest time, she thought we lived there at the office, because we spent so much time, you know, if we went and went to play something, she's like, why aren't we going home, when we would drive by the office? Because there were so many nights that she went to sleep in a pack and play. We picked her up, put her in her crib. And then the morning, she kind of went back until we got childcare squared away. That's what opening a new office is about, if anyone is thinking about it. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but you should really know the dirty details of what's going on there.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So then you said you were in that practice, the beautiful one, for 3 years. What systems did you decide to take with you? You're like, I love what they're doing here. And then what systems were you not so much of a fan of?
Oh my goodness. I mean, the only thing that Dr. Dempsey and I did not agree on is I, in my heart, believed that you could have a very fiscally healthy practice and still crack the door open for some access to care for children with Medicaid. And in that practice, we did not see any children with Medicaid whatsoever. And sometimes it was really, really sad because, you know, I would get a call from a pediatrician or someone and just like, can you please, please just see this, you know? And he had his reasons and he had formally taken it and just decided for all his reasons that I shouldn't be stating his reasons, but he just wasn't going to do it anymore. And then I came in after that decision had been made. So we didn't. And that's really the only thing we didn't agree on, period. And that's it. All the things that I learned from, he was an amazing clinician. And I learned very swiftly that probably the number one marketing piece is the signature that you put in every single child's mouth that you touch. That was the marketing piece. If you do excellent quality care all of the time, and even, you know, if you're restoring one tooth and maybe someone who referred the child to you restored the one in front of it, and maybe it's a little bit shaky, go ahead and smooth that restoration and seal over it and make it look pretty too. Because if you're the last one to touch a child, whatever is in their mouth now is called yours. And that is the best piece ever. And he was an amazing clinician. And he said, you do good work always. And that will speak magnitudes for who refers to you. Because when they graduate a pedo office, they go into a general dentist. And, you know, yes, their baby teeth fall out, but they're 6-year molars, they're 12-year molars, they're traumatized, you know, anterior teeth when they were 6, 7, 8 years old, those stay forever. And these were referring providers, they see that. And I think that was just an excellent key. The second thing he taught me was communication. Communication is being really respectful to those who entrust you with the care of either their referring patient or let's say it's a community person, you know, their friend, their niece, their nephew, their whatever. And so it's really respectful to follow up. So if a parent refers, you know, their sister's child or something, send them a card and say, you know, thank you so much for sending, you know, Leah to come see me today. I really, you know, for HIPAA reasons, you can't disclose what happened in that situation, but I really enjoyed seeing her, and a handwritten card from the doctor and thank you. And if it's a pediatrician, I learned very quickly, every child, you know, it takes a community to do truly a multi-specialty approach, comprehensive care for children. So pediatricians always get letters, referring general dentists always get a letter, and it takes some work, but it closes the loop. And we all know situations, you can't have a 100% perfect, everything went exactly as I was expecting. So a frequent thing that happens is a provider will refer a child to us. And at the time when they refer the child, yeah, sure, they just need a filling, but then there's some type of delay. And then the parent forgets about it until it starts hurting the child. And so then the parent's like, oh, that's right, I was supposed to go see Dr. Johnson. So they come in, we take an updated film, the tooth is abscessed. And so now we're removing the tooth and putting a space maintainer. And, you know, there's a lot of rural places in North Carolina that don't have pediatric dentists. So, and I don't mind at all. I guess this is one other thing Larry and I disagreed on. Yeah. He was, if you were a patient that practiced, you were a patient that practiced. He didn't just do, quote, the hard work. He didn't let general dentists refer in to do the restorative and then send them back. You either were there or you're not there because, and he's right. If every time the child walks in the door to your office, they're going to get numb, have something done, it's not really setting it up for, you know, what we want. But I also realize sometimes it's more convenient. I don't really have any problem with that. So I let parents do that. So going back to it, this general dentist, you know, refers this child to you and they're thinking you're doing a filling and then there's delay and you take the tooth. If you don't send any communication, they're like, wow, the last time I saw that kid, that was a really straight for filling. And she took the tooth out. They don't know the in-between, but if they have a letter saying, oh, you know, I know you thought, I think there was a delay. Here's the updated x-ray. Always, and also share, we want to image gently. So always sharing x-rays, but communication. And we also, I learned from Dr. Dempsey that we give report cards at every visit. In the world of a child at school, wherever, daycare, you get a report card. And so we give dental report cards and it talks about their hygiene. It talks about our recommendations for prevention, the recommendations for treatment. And on the backside, there is a written description of everything that we've recommended. So I would say those are the keys that I really learned from Dr. Dempsey's office, definitely.
Interesting. Okay. I like that. The single marketing piece is excellent quality care, then communication. So it sounds like at the same time, you're always nurturing your referrals, right? And would you just send them a card or would you send them other things all the time? Or,
you know, that is a great point because I think there are some practices that specifically orthodontics. I know I have a friend who's an orthodontist and his marketing budget annually is over $100,000. And I will tell you in full, complete disclosure, I absolutely, as far as what people would consider as marketing, I've never been that person. Mm-hmm. I don't go out to lunch with people. I've always worked during recess, as we call it in our practice. I always worked during recess to get me home to my own children faster and utilize that time. I'm also a huge fan of intermittent fasting. I feel like recess slows me down if I eat during recess and then I have less energy when I come back and I don't bring my best self to our friends. We call our patients our friends too. So I'm not a big fan of that. I'm probably pescatarian, but kind of vegetarian. So, you know, Christmas hams and things like that kind of gross me out. So we don't spend a lot of money in all this fluffy stuff. We are just this year, I'm like, we need to maybe do a little bit better. So other than the seamless communication with them, that is, in my opinion, the most important thing. I try to be a good community citizen. The door is always open for anyone. And I mean, anyone, you contacted me. If I can help somebody, I love this. I love my colleagues. I love our specialty. I love the children we serve. So for the family docs, when I'm like, if you ever need anything, you have a child in the chair, you don't know what to think, you know, phone a friend, text me an x-ray. Let me help you out. Let me be your ally. I can tell you, I've visited a lot of general practices, not just because I'm showing up with cookies, but they're like, I don't understand why nitrous doesn't work in my office, but it works in yours. Mm-hmm. I sent them to you for sedation, but you just use nitrous. I'm like, well, let's figure it out. So I will go to their office and I can tell you this has happened a few dozen times over the years. And this is year 25 of practice for me, where I go in and first of all, the evacuation system has turned up like a jet engine. So I don't really think any nitrous is reaching the patient. And then they are like using 10% nitrous oxide. I'm like, yeah, you just took, you know, a Corona Light to something that needs tequila. I'm just saying, you know, this is just not
good. Not gonna work. That's great to put it.
And so, you know, I try to be an ally and a mentor. We always have interns in our practice. We have high school interns. We have college interns. We have graduate interns that want to, they're usually wanting to be a dentist. Some of them, a hygienist. Some of them just stay in the practice and work. But we have a community spirit. Now I have a few dozen doctors in my community that were either my patients and became interns or just became interns. And just being part of the community, being part of the solution, not being competitive, you know, and I think the same thing, similarly, being okay with, hey, if you just want me to do restorative and you want to keep the recares in your practice, we don't use the word recall because it sounds like there's something defective. So we use the word recare, keep the recares in your practice and do whatever, you know, I'm fine with that. I believe in karma. I think that if you bring positive energy, it definitely comes back to you. So that's pretty much what we do. We like fun things. I like to promote healthy things. So for example, during cold and flu season, if someone says, oh, I need more referral pads or I need something like that, we will bring them like a case of bottled water with a big package of emergency, you know, and be like, stay well, you know, when our practice managers drop those off. We try to do things like that, that are not just here, eat cookies and, you know, try to be a little bit more healthy and productive for the solutions. But that's really, truly, that's truly it for the referring providers. We're in the process of, you know, I've always been overdue on a website. We're working on that right now. I mean, it's just never been a high value item. I think probably it would, you know, if we didn't have a full schedule, but we have two locations right now. We work out of the surgery center. We work out of the hospital. We have a little bit of a hospital hiatus due to a anesthesia provider issue situation in our area. But I feel with all seven doctors, I think everyone's working as hard as they want to work. So, you know, just by doing the good deeds and doing good work. So, and staying current. I think it means a lot to the community that we are always on the cutting edge. You know, I actually, from the day, you know, which is, let me think about this for a second, almost 22 years ago, opening the first location, we have never had conventional film. Like early adopters of digital radiography for less radiation, early adopters of paperless charts, early adopters of aesthetic zirconia crowns for children that are more challenging to place, but I was determined to master them so that they could have that. And early adopters, actually the first pediatric office in the country to use intraosseous local anesthesia system through Dental High Tech, which has been in Europe for many, many years, which offers a very, I mean, painless, you might feel pressure is, you know, one's perception is one's reality, but the most painless local anesthesia that we can deliver. So I think everyone knows that if it's out there, our practice is going to be learn it, master it, use it, teach it to other providers. So.
Yeah, I like that. That's wonderful. So another question I wanted to ask you, I know you mentioned that you grew a lot real fast at the very beginning. Is this kind of what you were doing, more like the referring and stuff like that? Or how did it happen?
That is a very good question. I think there are some keys, and this is about hard work too. I mean, I think if you talk to most of my friends, my colleagues, they would tell you I am probably a workaholic and I'm not afraid. You know, I'm not afraid to dig deep until I have success. And you have to do that. And you have to be willing to give 110% to make a success of anything. It really doesn't matter what you're talking about. You know, you're talking about a relationship, you're talking about your health, training for a race or starting a practice. So from the very, very beginning, trying to make sure that we have the best team members, I flex the schedule. So the schedule, we started very early in the morning so that, and initially there was a lot of year-round schools. So kids were on 9 weeks, off 3 weeks. So in those times, we had some days where we would end early and then we'd have some days where we end late, but we always started at 6:30 in the morning. And the reason why is so that children could have appointments before the parents had to go to work and not interfering with after school activities. And let's face it, everyone is fresh in the morning and their best self in the morning. Everyone gets tired in the afternoon, especially if you pick a child up from school and try to take them to appointments. So offering those appointments, offering long hours, really opened the door for flexibility for parents, especially in our area. We have Research Triangle Park. We have a lot of universities. We have a lot of professionals in this area. So not interfering with their workday or the children's day was huge. So I did that initially. The other thing I did is a lot of pediatric dentists don't do operative procedures in the afternoon. And I will. We do operative procedures all day long because some parents can just not swing getting their kids there until after school. And, you know, I tell them children do best in the morning. This is my recommendation, so forth, so on. It's your child. You get to make the choices. But we do that. We work all day long. And I think the other aspect is early on, as most people were, we really weren't part of any insurance networks, but we would help them file and do things. Now, you know, it's an impossibility to be that way. And I slowly learned the hard way when the entire anesthesia employer for the hospital I go to, which is, you know, nurse anesthetists, anesthesiologists, it was probably 50 families in the practice of this huge hospital. when they switched to not having any benefit for out-of-network for Delta, I actually had in the women's locker room at the hospital, anesthesiologists were changing her scrubs. And she's like, I just want to tell you something because you're my friend. And you've seen my three kids for years and years. And I want you to know our perception. You know, all of us here, we work at the hospital. This is our insurance benefit. And from our perspective, even though you get paid less, it is a black eye for you to not take our insurance. And I just stood and stared at her for a second. She said, do you realize I'm going to go out today? I'm going to take care of every patient that walks through the door. Do you think I even know what their insurance is? And I was like, ooh, ouch, wow, okay. So I picked up my phone, I called the office, and I was like, guess what we're going to do? We're going to start being a network with Delta Dental. And we were that day. And I texted her and said, hey, thank you for your candor. And guess what? We're taking it. So please let everyone know that they don't need to find. And she's like, everyone's going to find a new dentist. And because we don't believe we should do that. We don't treat our patients that way. We don't believe you should treat yours. So that was a very interesting. So when I started Moments, I've always been flexible to listen to what people tell me and pivot and not be recalcitrant to, oh, no, I'm not going to do that and dig my heels in about anything, because you have to be fluid, agile to remain successful. You can't just be stuck. It's kind of the same thing about materials. You know, when I opened the practice in Wakefield, not that I have personally any issue whatsoever with amalgam, but I was just so tired of defending it in Dr. Dempsey's practice that I was like, you know what? I spend so much of my life telling people why this is still okay. I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'm just going to go to composite fillings and be done with it. Just things like that.
Interesting. When you opened up when you started taking Delta, was that a whole nother, for example, okay, now we got to have someone always on the phones for insurance. I'm sure you already did, but I mean, like now they're even more busy or, you know what I mean? And now we have more insurance issues with this and the fees. And were you boggled down with that or?
Oh, I mean, you're 100% absolutely correct. You crack the door. Once you dive into the deep end of the insurance pool, it is an abyss. And, you know, I don't know if you have children or you've read the book, if you give a mouse a cookie or you give a pig a pancake, but it talks about like, oh, you give a mouse a cookie, well, then they're going to want a glass of milk. And then you know, this and that. And it's kind of sort of the same going down that line of like, oh no, now you have a full dedicated all the time insurance person. And now we have two all the time, full-time dedicated insurance people, if you want to know the truth. So it does increase your overhead, but it is a synergistic means of bringing patients in. So using the example of the company that provides all the anesthesia services for most of the major hospitals in Raleigh, well, now they all know. Now they all know who's on their insurance plan. And ironically, and so this has been several years ago, I was at the surgery center the other day, and one of the anesthesiologists walked up to me and she had a printed sheet of papers. And she's like, I live too far to go to your office, but just tell me who on this list do I need to go see for my children? And I thought to myself for a second, you know, this is where we're at. She didn't just come out and say, who's the best person to see by my house? She didn't ask me that. She said, of this list of people who have my insurance coverage, who do I need to see there? That the insurance was the highest value system, even though I know she can afford to have fee-for-service care, which there are very good fee-for-service providers that basically live half a mile. I mean, they practice half a mile from where she lives. She wasn't even entertaining that. And she has a husband who's a very successful businessman. She doesn't even have to work, but that was what she was asking me. It's just where we're at. I think the face of healthcare, the expectations have really changed in regard to, it's more of an expectation now, I would say, to accept the insurance.
Okay. That's interesting, because I know a lot of the times we want to start up something or go into something where it's just fee for service, but you kind of did it differently, right? You're like, okay, let's take some insurance on and pivot that way, right? And just roll with the punches kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes they're sneaky, you know, they'll lower the fees, they'll do some things, you know, for example, and of course, I feel passionately about seeing the children of those who serve our country. And TRICARE is horrible insurance. But, you know, so I'm going to tell a family who's lived apart because a parent was deployed for X number of months and they already have all these hardships. Oh no, sorry, I can't be your pediatric dentist. Thank you for serving, but I'm not seeing your kid. It's just some of my very closest friends have fee-for-service practices and I love them and what they have is a good thing. Everyone just has to choose their path and be happy with the decision. I also liked when my kids were little, you know, I'm at the playground playing with my kids and another parent begins talking to me and like, oh, what do you do? I'm a pediatric dentist. Inevitably, the first question was like, oh, do you take MetLife or something? In those first few years, I was like, no, you know, and they're like, ah, oh, too bad because our kids really like you and whatever. And so now I'm just like, I'm sure we do. Yeah. Whatever. Not that I might take my kids to the playground anymore. One's a vet student and one's in college, but it makes life easier.
Yeah. Interesting that that's never changed though, huh? They've always asked like the insurance is one of the first top 1 to 2 questions from back all the way till like the anesthesiologist, right? The doctor's just like, which one out of these do you take?
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago.
Interesting. Yeah. So then I wanted to ask you the second office you opened up. How is it opening a second office? Because sometimes we feel, or I don't know, is it just like copy and paste of the first one? What's different from everything else?
I am so glad you brought this up. So I will tell you, opening an office, I equate it to having a baby or running a marathon. So the first one, you're like, whew, that was hard. That one hurt a little bit. That burned a little bit. Yeah, that was not easy. You're like, oh, I got this though. I'm good. I've got it all figured out. And then you kind of forget about the burn a little bit too. And so you're like, okay, I'll do that again. So no is the answer. They all are so very unique with their own challenges. And the only thing that's different is the second time I was like, you know, this is probably going to be late because that's just the way it rolls. My expectation, I had a B plan. Yes, this is when I would like to be open, but it's probably not going to happen. So this is the B plan. And, you know, then with the third office, I really did. So the first two were suburban. The third office being the urban situation, not understanding that you couldn't work into the night, that was worse than I expected. And the other thing that's worse than expected is we have had immense plumbing issues that don't have anything to do with our office, but they come from above. When you have something living above you, that's a whole nother situation than a professional condo parks where you have neighbors. You know, one time I was seeing a patient and a sledgehammer came through the wall because the space next to me, the doctor was upfitting and yeah, they got a little excited with the sledgehammer, but that's one thing versus someone's ice maker malfunctioning and walking into squishy carpet, you know, just that's another thing. But no, it's not copy paste. Now the forms and the other thing is software is a huge aspect of this. So with the first, second location, we changed software because we wanted them to talk to one another and then sold that location. And then we ended up with the second location switching to another software that was supposed to talk to one another even better. And that's a little bit hairy. The software is handled very differently. The more offices you have, and it depends, you know, some people have multiple offices and they're independent nucleuses, but we wanted to make it where parents could schedule anywhere they wanted because of a certain day a week with a certain doctor, or they were going to be downtown anyway, or, you know, whatever the situation. So we have a lot of flexibility and now it's seamless. They can go anywhere.
What software was that?
So we started out with, we opened the downtown location. We started out with XL Dent. And recently we actually switched to Open Dental. They speak pretty seamlessly to one another.
Okay, interesting. Was it pretty easy for your team to learn from XL Dent to Open Dental?
Yeah, actually, I think Open Dental is really, I think it's intuitive. I mean, we're still, I mean, full disclosure, we switched the first week in November and I'm still learning the shortcuts and the little dirty details and the nuances and all the things. It's also what we have at the surgery center and, but different system and our laptops work. We can take our laptops in the hospital and surgery center and work with that too. So that's very good. The reason why we switched to Open Dental is my practice partner and I, in probably been about a year now, we sold majority shares of our practice to try to reclaim some administrative time from our life. It didn't exactly turn out that way, but we still own a good chunk of the practice and still have the reins. But we were trying to streamline those administrative processes to have less time spent on mundane tasks, which is a big part of owning a practice.
Interesting. Like, what mundane task would you say you were taking up too much time?
Oh my goodness. Just silly, for example, payroll. We used to have like a click, click clock. And honestly, now that we've streamlined that, I wish we could go back to the clock, because there's something mental about the team members when they swipe themselves in on the clock, like they're on, where now they're lined up at workstations and they're chit-chatting. You know, they would swipe and walk away. Now they're chit-chatting and there's that, you know, authenticator thing going on. So they have to have their mobile phones. And our practice policy is that when you're on your clock, we leave phones in a basket. Our team members do not have their mobile phones on them. That's a very interesting story of efficiency and overhead. But having practice, like I said, this summer will be the conclusion of 25 years. I finished residency in 99. And when phones became even more smart than they already were, I would pull the report and I would find that the on-time rate was just wildly diminishing and dropping. I used to have, you know, like a 94% on time rate. And in 2007, it just took a big tank. 2008, it was even worse. Like at one point, and it was when, so about 2008, most people had iPhones. Most people did. Mm-hmm. The phones were smart. So we went from 94%. And in a course of 2 years, so I would say from 2006 to 2008, we went down, it actually dropped to 40% at one point. So what was happening is team members were just constantly checking their phone and texting people and doing the, you know, doing the things. And so I went from like, you can't have your phones on your person. You got to leave them in the team lounge, team zones. Well, then they would be absent in the clinic because they were in the team zone on their phones. And then I was like, you can't use your phones on the clock because, I mean, it was getting worse. I think 40% was my all-time low of on time, which is terrible. And so you just can't do that. So then they were taking their phones and going in the bathroom. Yeah. So then there was that. And then I'm like, okay, you know, I'm having a hygienist that's paid a lot of money an hour posting to Facebook during the workday. So I'm like, okay, here's the bucket before you clock in. This is where your phone goes. And I mean, literally overnight, I popped back up into the 90 plus percent of on time rate. Like almost instantaneously. And the byproduct, which is really entertaining that I didn't even know would happen, I didn't get, but when people had their phones, the team members had their phones, there was no hurry to clock out for recess. There was no hurry to clock out at the end of the day because they had already been connecting with everyone they needed to connect with. They had already had their phone fixed in the process of the day. But when the phones were in the bucket until they clocked out, they got their work done, they cleaned up, and they were out of there. And so my overhead literally dropped. And it was not bad. It was not bad before. I mean, it was 55%. My overhead dropped immediately 5 percentage points just because every team member generally got off the clock 15 to 30 minutes faster per day. And we have a lot of team members. So, and it's not for everybody. Some people cannot physically separate from their phone. And we have little cards we give out. It says, my parent works at Carolina Pediatric Dentistry. If you have an emergency, call this number and press 2. And what will happen is all 47 phones in each location, so nearly 100 phones, will go wild and blow up and start blinking. And every phone in the place rings. So if there truly is an emergency, someone's going to get it. And we can even message between locations. So if there truly is an emergency, they can be reached. But some people just can't do that. And in our team manual, you are terminated if you use your personal device on the clock.
Wow. Okay. So then was there any pushback at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had people quit. Oh, yeah. Like, absolutely. Like, oh, no, I have kids. My phone never leaves. Okay. And I just made the decision because it was ruining my reputation for being, it was starting to be like, oh, they always run late over there.
Oh.
I went from, oh, they run late over there to like, dang, this office is on time. You know, you're going to get in and you're going to get out.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
And so you thought about it all, though, in that whole process, especially the part where you give them something like, hey, press two, right? Kind of thing. And then, I can imagine that's like the biggest excuse. Like, oh, what if it's for an emergency, right? Like, don't we give our kids the phones when they're young in case there's an emergency at school? Here you go. Then they call us. So I can only imagine the parents are like, well, I bought a cell phone for my kid just for an emergency. I need this. But interesting. Okay.
Of course,
I like that.
They at recess, they get their phones back and they do their thing. The phone is the new cigarette, you know?
Yeah.
And it's okay. I mean, it's certainly healthier. Well, I guess. I don't know. That's a whole other topic.
Why do you guys call it recess? Or what do you call it, recess?
Because that's what you call it in school. And it's something, you know, it's happy. It's your recess. And also, I think it's something that seems normal to kids. So if we have an emergency and they hear a team member say, you know, if they hear them say, oh, I'm going to take over for you, I think you need to go to recess. That's like, oh, cool. That's fun. They're going to recess. Kids know what that is. If they're like, do you want to go to lunch or whatever? It's more of a grown-up thing and a nuance that somehow this child who I'm sure didn't want to crash their bicycle and was in there getting their tooth put back in their mouth is an inconvenience of some sort. Like you're delaying this person from having their lunch, their grown-up lunch hour, where recesses just happen all the time. You know, it's all good. So it's just a little lighthearted. Yeah, just trying to keep it in child terms and keep it friendly.
Yeah. Okay. Got you. And then one of the last couple of questions I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned about this process that we should never say always. Why?
I think the moment you use the word never or always, and for anyone who's been a parent, you'll know whatever you do, avoid saying you absolutely are not going to do something. You're absolutely going to do something with your child because sure enough, you will be humbled in 2 seconds. So I think it's a good idea to just be open-minded in your practice life. I'm not a big fan of hams, but you know, maybe that's going to be some new craze. And if that's the thing, I am open to buying ham or eating ham or whatever the situation is. We just don't want to be stuck in the mud. And especially my birthday was last weekend or my birthday was this month and I just turned 52. And I never want to be perceived as someone like, I do it this way because that's what I do. And I always do it that, or I never do this because I just never do that. I just want to stay current and relevant. And it's very important to me that our practice is a reflection of that. And of course, I have the honor of practicing with 6 other just dynamic super providers that are way better than me. So I'm sure that we will not become, stagnant, but I think it's good to avoid 100% anything except for excellent. Yes, we will always strive to deliver the most excellent care. You know?
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. And then how did you find those providers?
Oh, that's such a good, you have all the good questions. I'm very involved in organized dentistry and leadership and education. Even though I am a full-time private practitioner, I've always had my hand in those things, and it's given me the opportunity to be a lifelong learner, which I think is so important, but also to have relationships all over our country, frankly, all over the world. And, you know, we have had doctors visit us from Rome, from Kazakhstan, from Saudi, from Dubai, all these places because I have gone there and I have taught and I have spoken. So if they have someone that they met or someone who comes to the U.S. and they plan to go through licensure or something, or even, of course, all the U.S. people, then, you know them and they're like, oh, I have someone looking for someone. They're a great person. And so our current doctors, my practice partner, Clark Morris, he was a dental student. I met him when he was a dental student. He was just a great guy. Funny story. I don't have time to tell you, but we met and he's like, oh, what are you doing this weekend? And like, kind of a funny thing you should ask. My husband and I are doing a 100-mile run. And he said, oh, I heard you can have pacers. I've been training for the Tar Heel 10-miler. I'll pace you. And he gave me, and I was like, oh, I have pacers lined up, but thank you. Well, one of my pacers bagged out. And so this dental student who just met me in the middle of the night when it was hailing and ran 12.5 miles with me. And it's just, his good karma came back. He calls it serendipity or whatever, but just great. And then 2 of them, I served on the board with their chair of the department. One of them was in the Leadership Institute with me at Kellogg, and he was their graduate director. And one of them I met teaching a course, and she was a resident. And she just said, I'm going to come. practice with you. And I was like, I think that's great. You're excellent. And so those that I haven't actually taught them a clinical course, I do a skills check. And I do the same. I'm the director of the Raleigh Children's Surgery Center, and I do skills check there on a typodont. Just want to make sure anybody who has my backing is providing excellent care. And some people think, you know, whatever, oh, she's such a hard ass, but my reputation means a lot. And making sure everybody's good. But no, we have amazing doctors. I have a great life.
Awesome, Lorie. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So we're about to transition an email system. So I would probably go with my Gmail this time. It's drlarie, L-A-R-E-E. So D-R-L-A-R-E-E, no periods or anything, at gmail.com. And I don't have any issue giving out my mobile number. I get so many emails. 919-247-8706. 919-247-8706. And we have a doctor from somewhere visiting our office. I can't even remember a week where we didn't have a visitor. So you're always welcome. Come to Raleigh. It's beautiful.
Wow. You're amazing, Lorie. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. And we'll hear from you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And Lorie, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. We truly appreciate it. Don't forget, take advantage of this exceptional offer. Get free access to Oryx until you reach 200 active patients. Remember, Oryx stands out from standard practice management systems by fundamentally transforming your approach to patient record management, scheduling, and insurance processing, ultimately enhancing your practice's revenue and financial health. And what sets Oryx apart is its endorsement by the renowned COI Center. So elevate your practice's efficiency and realize substantial savings. This is a pivotal opportunity you won't want to miss. Go in the show notes below. Click the first link in the show notes below. Check out the exclusive deal Oryx is giving you and sign up with Oryx today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.